So in the kind of the subtitle here, the transcendent Lord of all calamity, he says, it is one thing to cite passages of scripture that make broad affirmations of meticulous sovereignty, but what about specific affirmations of the casual connection between God and evil?
Yeah.
And guess what? They're there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. God's, soul transcendent rule and authority is affirmed by, for instance, Jeremiah and Lamentations, right? Who has spoken it and it came to pass unless the Lord has commanded it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that good and bad come, Jeremiah says.
Everyone looks at Lamentations as this ho-hum, oh, woe is me. But he's saying, no, read it in the light of what's being declared. Like, yes, you have the badness in there, but it's all a declaration that God is sovereign and he controls this and he's above it, and we're able to trust in him even when it becomes bad and awful and it seems like we're unable to go. Yes, your own way.
Yeah. And so he says, in this particular passage in Lamentations, that God is acknowledged as the ultimate source of all that comes to pass, right? He's the source of it, right? All who has spoken and it came to pass, well, unless the Lord has commanded it. He commands and accomplishes, so he is in control. He's powerful. He does what he wants to do. And in similar fashion, in Isaiah 45:7, good and bad, Lamentations tells us, indicates a comprehensive scope to what God determines to transpire. He determines both good and bad to come about. Now, the term bad, like calamity in Isaiah 45:7, is the standard Hebrew term for the word evil. Go figure, right? Yet notice he tells us that this is not some lowly entity that is the source of these occurrences, but this was, as this passage says, the Most High, right? So there you have it. There's a specific, kind of passage that deals with this, right?
Right. Right. And especially, the charge is always, the God of the Old Testament is so much meaner than the God of the New Testament. And it's like, well, okay, there's an argument to respond against there. But why are they saying that? Well, it's because so much judgment is occurring. So much, quote unquote, bad stuff is happening in the Old Testament, where he's judging nations. He's calling for warfare, for the judgment over people that are killing their children. He's calling armies to come into to divide the nation, his people, and then he's declaring judgment against those people who know better than to attack the Israelite people.
Yeah.
So the broader context of Jeremiah's pronouncement is the affliction that the weeping prophet has experienced by watching his beloved city of Jerusalem succumb to the Babylonian invaders in 587 BC. He acknowledges God's sovereignty over this calamity, and that does not leave him in a state of hopelessness. Oh, God just let this happen, or this was outside God's, domain. And of course, us in our free will, we've attacked each other.
And
this is clearly not what God intended completely in any part of his being or will. He didn't even know about it. No. A few verses earlier, he speaks of his compassionate God. In Lamentations 3:32-33, he says, but though he causes grief, he will have compassion according to the abundance of his steadfast love, for he does not afflict from his heart or grieve the children of men.
All right, so notice, even though God is the determining force of the cause of grief, right, that humans suffers, that we suffer as humans, it's not the intention of his heart to afflict humans simply for the sake of affliction. He does not propose evil for evil's sake.
Right.
Right. Instead, it has some broader purpose, and it's always designed, Christensen wants us to understand, for a greater good.
Right. 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 So he's not this Zeus-like character who, he gets kind of angry with the men that he created, and they're, not giving him enough alms, or, they're focusing on his brother more, and so he's got to go down and exact famine upon them. He's not doing evil for evil's sake. He's doing it either for a greater good or divine judgment, which would also be kind of in that scope of greater good there.
Right.
So only the transcendent Lord is qualified to decree good and evil without his comprehensive, unbridled holiness being contaminated by the latter. That's Deuteronomy 32, 39, and 1 Samuel 2, 6. While the Almighty does not do evil, he ordains even its worst manifestations to take place. He allows it to happen, or he calls forth, you know, I think of the you know, David's numbering the census, and in one it says, you know, God made him do this, or sent him a delusion to do this, or a lying spirit. In the opposite passage that speaks of the same thing, it says he sends out the evil spirit to kind of force David to do this, to make him do it, so that God can judge him. And so God uses both the evil spirits and the evil of David's heart to put him in a position where he can judge, and then ultimately come about. And
of course, David does it on his own free will. It's not like, you know, God jumps on him, God's pins down his arm,
manipulating him through
there. Yeah. Cry, uncle, cry, uncle.
Right, because you know, Nathan comes to him and gives him the, you know, man steals, you know, has 99 and steals the one. Oh, and you know, I will kill that man. Who is that man? You are that man. And yeah, he falls down and he's like, oh, I've sinned, and he's just wrecked. And so, you know, again, that purpose is seen within Scripture, and we can point to it and say, he did this, allowed this bad thing to take place, and then goodness resulted into it. And if we don't have that kind of divine God's eye view with the inspired Scripture, it's really hard to be able to kind of parse that out and say, here's the evil that took place, and then here's the ultimate good. And so that's why when we get into when we talked about a few episodes ago of this evil seems to be just bouncing out in the universe and it's not attached to good. Well, it's really hard for us to know without a divine decree telling us good resulted as a result of this. So one reason why this fact is so hard to swallow, though, is we tend to evaluate the nature and actions of God as though he were confined to the finite realm of creature and not the transcendent realm of deity. As the sole creator, possessor, and sovereign Lord of all, he is not comparable to any mortal sovereign.
So that's something we have to think about. Than we are, right? He's other than we are,
right?
And so he needs to be considered in that particular light.